Welcome to the Gospel According To with Ryan and Mike, a conversation designed to explore what makes the gospel good news in various books and topics of the Bible.
All right, Ryan, we are back today in Romans 3. And in the last episode, we walked through the end of chapter 2 and the first few verses of chapter 3. Today, we're going to pick up in 3 and verse 9. Let me just read that. And then let's walk through it together. What then? Are we better than they? Not at all. For we already charge that both Jews and Greeks are all under sin. As it's written, there is none righteous, not even one. There's none who understands. There's none who seeks for God. All have turned aside. Together they've become useless. There's none who does good. There is not even one. Their throat is an open grave. With their tongues they keep deceiving. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their paths, and the path of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be closed and all the world may become accountable to God. Because by the works of the law, no flesh will be justified in his sight, for through law comes the knowledge of sin.
What a happy question this is, right?
Yeah, isn't that cheery?
Good day, everyone.
Yeah.
So Paul is obviously in a mood when he writes
this. He was having a bad day, and he was just like, I gotta get this out. Okay.
He does. He had been so fed up by the Corinthians, which probably does explain why this has the tone. Yeah. Does the Corinthians had finally given him enough? No.
But it's better than suppressing your emotions. We were talking about that earlier, right? Like, it's better than suppressing it.
Paul is not a stoic. He lets it out. All right. So we need to contextualize this, of course.
Yes.
With what we just read in 3:1-8. Mm-hmm. He asked similar questions in 3:1 and 3:9. What advantage has the Jew? Are Jews any better off? On the one hand, Mike, 3:1-8, are Jews any better off?
Yeah, they certainly have a very real, tangible role in God's story that they were given, this stewardship of the scriptures, right?
Excellent. Yeah. But then he comes and contradicts himself and says, what then? Are Jews any better off?
And so it's better in what sense, right? And I think we see this ultimate sense that he's been talking about in the larger context, the idea of how someone will stand before God on the day of judgment. And in that sense, no, they have no special privilege or status or exemption, right?
Yes.
They're not better off.
Okay. Now, this is really important. What are the pronouns that he uses in 3:9?
We and they.
Okay. When you read through Romans 1-3, y'all, pay attention to the pronouns. This is really important. Also in Galatians 3, I may say, but here in Romans 1-3, pay attention to the pronouns. Now, Paul in Romans is not merely just sitting down one day and crafting a letter on a napkin. Paul is crafting a rhetorical piece of art here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And a lot of what Paul is doing in Romans 1-3 is developing a rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
So what Paul's doing in Romans 1:18-32 is using the they language.
Yes. And
Ben Witherington in his commentary has all the Greek terms for those of y'all that want to go in depth with this. He's developing a rhetoric where he's trying to urge his audience to get on his side and agree. Look how bad they
absolutely
are.
Yeah.
It's much like Nathan did with David.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
look how
absolutely
bad they are. Look how bad they are.
Because we can all agree the pagans are going to receive God's wrath.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. We all hate them. Look how bad they are. Mm-hmm. But then he changes to second person in chapter two to you, Jews. Mm-hmm. Now, again, this is a rhetorical move. He's already, again, think of Nathan the prophet in this. I think this is helpful. That man is horrible. Agreed? Mm-hmm. You're not any better. You are the man.
Yeah.
Paul's doing the same thing here. They're horrible. You're not any better.
Yeah.
And so the Jews, and there's historical weights to what he's getting at, especially in 2:17 through 24, to Jewish rebellion and Jewish sin in Rome within 10 years of this being written. So, I mean, there is historical weight to Paul's getting at, maybe even particular events they would have had in their mind. Mm-hmm. But in chapter two, just notice you, mm-hmm. you Jews, you who rely on the law, you who are circumcised.
Yeah.
Well, then, beginning in chapter three, he again changes his pronouns around to now asking rhetorical questions.
Yeah.
So whereas Paul has developed the them of chapter one, the you of chapter two, now he's developing more just rhetorical questions. Do Jews have an advantage? What is the purpose of circumcision? Does their faithlessness nullify the faithfulness of God? Notice all the questions. These are all, this is the definition of rhetorical questions, okay? Mm-hmm. In chapter 3, yeah. 1 to 8. Well, then Paul surprises us in 3:9 by saying, what then? Are we Jews any better off? Now, Mike, why did he say you Jews in chapter 2, but we Jews in chapter 3?
Yeah, I mean, that's I mean, a major interpretive question, isn't it, in this whole section? But there's definitely
it's almost like there's a 1,600-page book somewhere written on this.
Yeah,
Paul and the exactly. God for anybody that wants to. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, but there's a personalness to this. It's not just these like charges against the other, but Paul sees himself in the same light.
Okay. Now I think that's really important here. The way I would say it is this: Paul dramatizes the difference between Jew and Gentile in chapters 1 and 2, yeah. for the sake of making it ambiguous in chapter 3. So let me say that again. Paul dramatizes the difference between Jew and Gentile in chapters 1 and 2 for the sake of making it ambiguous in chapter 3. At the end of the day, when it comes to one standing as righteous, mm-hmm. does one's status as a Jew or one's status as a Gentile make one righteous?
Not at all.
Okay. And to Paul's argument, That's the conclusion there. Mm-hmm. It's really important, so let's repeat this. To be worded or reckoned as righteous, it does not matter one little bit whether you're circumcised or uncircumcised physically. It does not matter whether you were born in Jerusalem or whether you were born in Rome. It does not matter who your mama is. Doesn't matter who your daddy is, okay? None of the ethnic stuff matters anymore.
Yeah.
Are we Jews any better off? If I could ask another rhetorical question here, are we Jews any more righteous? The answer is?
Not at all.
Because Paul has already charged that everyone, Jew and Gentile alike, is under sin. Mm-hmm. So, yes, what Paul says in 3:9 through 18 is harsh. But he's including himself in that list.
Yeah, because absolutely.
The difference that he's making now is not between Jew and Gentile. It's actually between humanity and God.
Yeah, exactly.
And Paul is obviously not considering himself a part of the triune God. Paul is considering himself a part of humanity, which is under sin. Paul himself was under sin. Mm-hmm. And so, to again, just to understand the rhetoric of what Paul's doing here, because this is rhetorically brilliant. Paul dramatizes the difference between Jew and Gentile in 1 to 2 for the sake of making it ambiguous in chapter 3, that then he may come in triumphantly and say, the real difference is not between Jew and Gentile, the difference is between humanity and God. All humanity is under sin. God is righteous. And that's what's going to take the argument forward. Mike, summarize that in your own words for me.
Well, I was, let me just say something else first just to, well, okay. Yeah, no, I'll summarize it first. Yeah. Essentially, we need to see more or less what he said in verse 9. All are under sin, regardless of any boundary line that you might imagine, right? In the immediate context, Jews who have strong biblical grounds to stand on, have some privilege or whatever that they would see, it's ultimately misplaced if it's not grounded in God's will. And so what we see is, at the end of the day, Jew and Gentile stand on the same ground under sin before God. No special status, no special exemption. One of the things I was going to say to that, just to maybe help this land a little bit more personally, and not even so much just to make application, but just to help us see how this lands, because it's easy to caricature some of this like dichotomy between Jew and Gentile, or maybe even to just not fully appreciate it, but just reflect that throughout human history, in every civilization, right, there is this dividing people into certain groups. And it's ultimately about status and privilege and power. And we want to be in the privileged group and other everyone else, right? And to just divide humanity into these various groups, and you can look at it on racial lines in our, you know, more recently in our country, you can look at it on ethnic lines, you can look at it on wealth versus poverty, all these sorts of things that we divide people into these groups and favor certain groups over others. And sin is the great equalizer here, that before the Creator, all those boundaries are dissolved as all stand before him in sin.
Totally.
Or Anderson.
And I mean, to go back to an application that I made in our previous discussion, are we who are raised in the church better off than you who are not raised in the church?
Not at all. For all, as we've already charged, all are under sin.
Yeah, and I think that's where the application needs to fall upon us. Is those who are quote unquote raised in the church often do develop this superiority complex.
Sure. That, oh yeah.
We know what's right and we have the truth and et cetera, et cetera. When Paul's relativizing that, no, we're all under sin. It's not a matter of what people group you're a part of. It does not matter what people group you're a part of. All humanity is under sin. And with that understood, then I think we understand the poem that Paul develops in 11 to 18. He's drawing here mainly from Psalms and Isaiah, and is wanting to demonstrate the unrighteousness of humanity. And this is not for the sake of merely saying, I hate people, but this is for the sake of then dramatizing the righteousness of God.
Yeah. And all these passages were speaking about Jews, you know, who were doing these things, right? So in the Psalms, David was being oppressed by fellow Jews, right? And so to say none is righteous, he's talking about his fellow countrymen. So it's, again, even the scriptures bear witness to that as the designation, just the fact that you're Jew. That's never been the designation, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. It's such an important point to make that no one is righteous. No, not one. No one understands. No one seeks God. Contextually in the Old Testament, who is that talking about initially?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Yeah, who is that talking about initially in the Old Testament? The covenant people of God. Yeah, even exactly. The people of God. No one is righteous. No, not one. No one understands. No one seeks God. All have turned aside. Together they become worthless. No one does good. No, not even one. All of this is a way of reminding that even in the times before Jesus, God's covenant people were faithless. God's covenant people had been unrighteous. God's covenant people were under sin.
Yeah. And it's like, it reminds me a little bit about, not to switch context, but you remember that story in John where the Jews at the time say, we've never been enslaved to anyone. It's like, what? Don't you know your history, right? You know, it's sort of like Paul's needing to try to ingrain this in them in the same way, right? Like, yeah, we know the Gentiles are under God's wrath, right? But it's like we forget our storyline to realize, like, we're in the same place, right? You know,
this application may become tiresome, but forgive me. But but especially for older Christians who've been in the church for a long time, don't you remember how righteous the 50s and 60s were? Don't you just remember the good old days when everybody feared God and came to church in a suit and all that good stuff? I can dig up some evidence to the contrary that it wasn't quite that good. Yeah. We fall back into that quite quickly.
Totally, yeah.
None is righteous, no, not one. So then he gets to verse 19. Now, we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law. What law is that talking about?
Again, the Torah.
Right? Yeah. Right? So we know that the Torah says, that whatever the Torah says, it speaks to those under the Torah, that is the Jews, so that every mouth may be stopped and that the whole world may be held accountable to God. Whoa, now that's a stretch. How does the whole world being held accountable to God rely upon the Torah?
I mean, what he's just said, he's quoted from Torah to support his argument, right? All are under sin.
And so, even the covenant people of God are not righteous. The whole world is going to be held accountable. For by the works of Torah, no human being will be made righteous in his sight, since through the Torah comes the knowledge of sin. Mm-hmm. Now, 3:20 is a verse that can be plucked out and turned on its head and made to say whatever Luther wanted it to say. But sure. Let's make sure that we understand what this verse is actually saying. Mike, you take a stab and then I'll correct you.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Let's sharpen our elbows here. No, I mean, it's at a ground level, just underscoring everything he's already said, right? That the scriptures are highlighting and bringing to light the problem of sin. There, I dare you to argue with that.
I will. you're unrighteous. I have evidence that that no one seeks God. Okay, no. Totally agree. A couple of just defining notes about this, particularly here by works of law. He does not mean by this any human effort, because you have to reconcile this with chapter 2, verse 6. He will render to each one according to his works. Okay? Yeah. So Paul is not throwing out all human effort here.
Yeah.
What he's throwing out is works of Torah, circumcision, etc. And that for us is like the things that we raise in the church held on to as our badges. Yeah. Those things are not going to justify you, because the Torah brings the knowledge of sin.
Yeah.
All are under sin. Now, let me ask this, Mike. Does the law also bring other things beyond the knowledge of sin?
Oh, totally. Knowledge of God. Yeah.
So I mean, it's like 3:20 likewise should not be held as, oh yeah, all that the Torah could ever do was teach us about sin.
Right.
That's one thing it did that was really important, but it does a great many other things as well. So I just want to clarify 3:20, the works of law here are not any human effort. It's particularly the works of Torah that the Jews held up as their badges. Yeah. We are righteous because we're the covenant people of God. You're all under sin. But likewise, the second note is that the law, it does bring about the knowledge of sin, but it brings about a great many other things as well.
Yeah. I find it helpful to just render that phrase works of law Torah observance, right? You know what I'm saying? It's the same idea, because it's not on work in the sense of activity versus inactivity, but it's like this works of the law is a phrase that Paul uses, and we particularly see this in Galatians as well, that just has to do with the things that distinguish between a Jew and a Gentile, right? Awesome. And so by living like a Jew, does that justify you? No, because doing that, right, going to the Torah, is revealed sin.
Well said. So next time we are going to talk about the good news, and we're going to talk about the righteousness of God. Anything else before we close today, Mike?
No, that's perfect.
Very good. We'll pick up next time.
Thanks for listening to the Gospel According To podcast. If you have any questions about what you heard today, please send us a voice message. We would really love to hear from you. Make sure you follow us on social media, subscribe, and click the bell to get notified when we drop a new episode. Until next time, and for all time, your God reigns.